Today's shiur in Maseches Bava Basra will be beginning at the lower part of Daf Kuf Nun Ches Omid Beis. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shi'ur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we open up our Sugya today, the Shi'ur begins at the bottom of Kuf Nun Ches Amud Beis. We open up 4 lines from the bottom, noticing a geometric form. In our marking system, as you have become familiar from the introduction, the geometric forms represent a series of connected ideas or of related topics. In the marking pre-marked Gemaras that we make available, we offer in the outside margin topic headings and structural notes. In this case, we have such a note in the outside margin featuring a triangle under the heading Mivneh, indicating structure. We've indicated there the triangles represent Sidro Shel Nisyonos, a series of attempts. Lodas Eza Halocha Shalchu Mitam, which is the Halocha that was sent from there, sent from Eretz Yisrael, She Metuar Kedavar Kosha B'dinei Momenus, that is described in this sugya as something that is very difficult to understand. We open up the Gemara with something that is admittedly hard to understand. Shalchu mitam, ben shelovo benichsei oviv, bechaye oviv, umeis. The Rabbeinu Gershom presents the case at the bottom of the page. Shalchu mitam, ben shelovo benichsei oviv, klomar, al nichsei oviv. A son borrowed, guaranteeing the loan that he's taking out using his father's property, b'chayi oviv, while his father was alive, umeis haben b'chayi oviv, and the son that took out the loan dies in his life, in the lifetime of his father, v'achar kach meis o'av, and then the father dies. The Gemara continues, Benoi moitzi miyad halukuchos. And the Rabbeinu Gershom says that Beno means Beno shel ben. The grandson, moitzi miyad halukuchos, would mean he, the grandson, turns to the purchasers and takes the property that they purchased away from them. What we said does not make any sense. And to this, the Gemara says, Vizuhi shekosha bedine momenis. And this particular halacha that was sent from there, Shalchu mitam, that was sent from there, is classified as a very difficult halacha in Dine Momenus. But before we even attempt to understand what the difficult halacha is, what was said is just not understandable to begin with. Not that it's a halacha that has something understandable to it, but just it's hard to grapple with it. Here, there's something that's not understandable at the outset. The Gemara raises 2 questions. Love, my mapik. When we talk about someone taking out a loan, what in the world is he doing collecting? The oid, a second difficulty in what was presented, lekuchos my avidite. We didn't see any mention of purchasers in the presentation of the halacha, so what are they doing over here? So, we're just going back to the starting point with the continuation of the Gemara. Ella, skipping the parentheses, the Tosfos on Kuf Nun Tes Omer Aleph indicates that these words are not part of the Girsa. We continue with the top of Kuf Nun Tes Omer Aleph. Ben Shemochar Benichsei Oviv B'chaye Oviv Umeis. a son who sold his father's property while his father was alive, and the son died. Benoi moitzi miyad halukuchos. The son of the one who sold the properties turns to the purchasers and takes the property away from them. Vizuhi shekoshe bedine momenus. And this is what is very difficult to understand in this realm of monetary law. And the difficulty is presented. With the markings, we've indicated with a dashed underline, and this is featured in the outside margin. You can see under the topic head, under the structural heading Mivneh, the dashed line is featured. Havlotas ma shenechshav kosher bedini momenus. When these dashed underlines appear as you go down the omid, you'll see them appearing again and again. These are the points that are difficult to understand. V'leim rulei, let the purchasers say to this particular ben who is trying to take the property away from them, say, avuch masvin, your father sold the properties, va'at mapik, and you're coming to take it away? What right in the world do you have to take them, to collect them? The Gemara, at this point, and we feature a double underline marking, which itself is a series marking, the Gemara will time and time again say, what's so difficult to understand about the behavior of this particular grandson coming to take the properties away from the purchasers? Umay kushya. What is difficult about this grandson taking properties away from the purchasers? Dilma motzi omar. Maybe the grandson can come to them with the following claim. Mikoyach avua de'abo ko'asina. I am coming through the strength or merit of my grandfather. In other words, the properties that you bought were properties that really belonged to my grandfather, and I'm coming through him. In other words, you bought properties from someone, namely my father, who had no right to sell. Teda dichtiv. Tachas avosecho yu bonecho. The pasuk says that the descendants take the place of those that came before them. The tachas avosecha, in the place of the fathers, will be the sons. Tishisemo l'sarim b'chol ha'aretz. That's the pasuk. The spirit of this pasuk indicates that grandchildren move in to the spot where their predecessors were. Ella, e kashya. The Gemara goes on to say, if there is something that was sent, namely the sholchu mitam expression, which opened up this particular series, if there was some halacha that was sent that poses a difficulty in understanding, ha kashya, the following. Ben bechor. This means a son who is a bechor. Shemochar chelik bechora. B'chaye oviv, umeis b'chaye oviv. He sold the portion that he anticipated receiving as a bechor, namely, a firstborn is entitled to an extra portion in the estate of his father, when his father would die. In this case, the firstborn son died before his father. Before he died, he sold the anticipated portion that he was going to receive as a firstborn, the anticipated extra portion. Benoi moitzi miyad halukuchos. His son, in turn, turns to the purchasers and takes the property away from them. Vizuhi shekoshe bedine momenus. And this is difficult to understand in the realm of monetary law. And what's the difficulty? Avua mazvin ihu mapik. His father conducted a sale and he comes along and takes away. V'chitema, and if you try to argue, as we argued before, that the grandson occupies the position of his father, and therefore stakes a claim on his grandfather's property as if he were an immediate son of that grandfather. Reading again, V'chitema hochinami omar mikoyach avua de'abo ko'asino, that this grandson comes along and says that I am coming to inherit directly from my grandfather. The response to that would be, I mikoyach avua de'abo ko'asio, if you are coming by virtue of the grandfather, b'chelek b'choro mai avidite, you're not a b'chor. This grandson that's coming to stake claim on the property, and he would claim that he's coming as an immediate heir to the grandfather, well, he's not a b'chor. So what right does he have to claim that particular portion? And if that be the case, so then this would be a good example of a difficult halacha. The Gemara says in response, who says that this is a difficult halacha? Umay kushya. Why should this be presented as an example of a difficult halacha to understand? Dilma motzi omar. It could be that this grandson could claim as follows. Mikoyach avua de'abo ko'asino. I'm coming to inherit my grandfather. Uva mokoim av ko'imno. And I am standing in the position of my father. And my father was a firstborn. So I am simply occupying his position in the line of inheritance, and I am claiming that the sale that my father conducted while he was alive was not legitimate, and I have first claim to the property, and not you, the purchasers. If that be the case, then the last triangled example is not difficult to understand. Elo ikashya hokashya. So, if there is something that's difficult to understand, we continue with the next proposition. Hoyo yoidea loy edus bishtar ad shaloi naase gazlon. A person signed a document as a witness to a particular deal. And when he signed this document, he had been an honest person, a legitimate witness. Vinaase gazlon. In the course of time, though, he became a thief. In other words, he stole property from somebody. Remember, this person who now is a thief had signed a document. There comes a time when documents are used to make collections with. There's a need to verify the signatures on the document. Generally speaking, signature verification would be done by those who signed it. Someone would come along and say, yes, that is my signature. On occasion, if the person died or is not available, two other witnesses could come along and testify, yes, we recognize that to be the signature of so-and-so. In this particular case, where the signatory, when signed, albeit was a kosher, was an acceptable witness, but now he is not acceptable. As far as verification is concerned, the Gemara says, "Hu eino meid al ksav yodoy." He cannot testify about his signature, being that right now he's a thief, he's not a legitimate witness. Aval achirim meidim. But others, outsiders, could come and testify and serve as verification to the authenticity of this signature. Now, what's difficult about this halacha? And once again, you can see the dashed underline. And as we said in the markings, this represents the highlighting of that which is difficult to understand. Hashto, ihu lo mehemon. Here, the fellow himself is not believed. Achrini mehemni, and outsiders would be believed. The Rashbam adds, in the lower part of the page, if you notice where the asterisk is, on the third line of Rashbam commentary under the Gemara, Valo shemo hu atzmo chosam bo hayom sheker, shere gazlan hu, ukshemakirin chasimoso, ma onu marvichin bekach, follow Shema Posulhu. In other words, he's saying it could be that the thief himself signed the document today, and as such, he signed it as a thief, as a liar, as an irresponsible individual, someone unacceptable. And when we come along and recognize the signature, of what benefit is there that you have two outsiders testifying as to the authenticity of this signature? It could very well be that the person that signed is Pasul. So by saying such a halacha, that the signer himself is not acceptable, but outsiders would be acceptable, why should that be? Vizu hi shekoshe bedine momenus. And the Gemara continues by saying, and this is that which is difficult with regard to dine momenus. My kushya, who says that this is difficult to understand? Dilma kegoin shehuchsak ksav yodoi bebeizdin. What's being described over here is a situation where the signature of the person who now is a Goslin had been established prior to the theft as being his signature. So, as to the objection that we saw described in the Rashbam, namely the possibility that today he signed it and I'm not accepting his testimony but I will accept others, that's not the case. The case is that prior to his becoming a thief, his signature was already established by others as being an authentic signature. The Rashbam continues, Kigon Shehuchsuk, Behenpik, Henpik, Bebeis, and Henpik is a court certification that appears in a document under the signatures where three Dayonim sign that they know these signatures to be verified. Beterem heyoisei gazlon, before he became a gazlon. Dehashtalekol lemeimar hachi. And if this be the case, then the objection that was raised just before, that maybe today he signed, is not an objection. Elo elu meidim shechosmu behem pikzeh. Rather, the dayonim, the judges that appear in this document certification, tell us these are our signatures, the Kaimush Dharmakami Dahavihai Gavro Gazlan, and they tell us, the judges tell us, that we certified the authenticity of this document before this guy became a Gazlan. Vahishaito Hoyohu Atzmonem Onomar. And at that point in time, the signer himself would have been believed to say Zek Sav Yodi. And if that be the case, so Vahashto Leko Lemifrach, and now there is no longer the objection that was raised before, namely Ihu Lo Mehem Anachrini Mehemni, that he himself would not be believed and others would be believed. Toho Hani Achrini Aksav Yodon He Meidin Velo Aksav Yodo. Because as a result of the explanation we're giving now, what is happening? The people that are certifying the authenticity of the shtar are the judges that certified the shtar, and they're testifying that they signed their court certification. And as a result of that, they are not even testifying directly on the signature. They are testifying today about the court certification that they themselves signed. And the shtar Memela becomes kosher. Continuing in the Gemara, Ela I Kasha Ha Kasha. Rather, if there is some halacha that was sent that's difficult to understand, it is the following. Hoyo Yodea Lo Edus Bishtar Ad Shelo Tipo Lo Birusha. A person had signed a document concerning some property before it fell to him as an inheritance. Now, that very same property that is in question fell to him in inheritance. Hu eino yocho l'kayim ksav yodo. He cannot verify the signature that he signed on this document. Aval acherim yecholim l'kayim ksav yodoi. But others
could verify his signature. He can't verify the signature because he has a vested interest in this particular property. But others could. The Bach adds the comment that we saw above in the Gemara, and in our marked edition, we've dashed underlined these missing words, and you can see that on the inside margin. Hashta ihu lo mehemon achrini mehemni. Could it be that now this fellow, the actual signer, is not believed to verify his signature, but others would be believed? That outsiders are believed when the concerned party himself is not believed. The Gemara, going back into the Gemara text, Umay Kushya, what is so difficult about this? And notice again the double underline. Each time the Gemara proposes something as an example of a difficult halacha to understand, you notice how the Gemara rejects it. Here too, Dilma Hachanami, maybe here too, Kagon Shehuchsek Ksav Yodoy Bebesdin. What is really happening is the achirim that are mentioned here as being believed in establishing the authenticity of this document are really the judges that are attesting to the court certification, the henpik that they signed, and when they signed the certification of this document, the signer himself would have been acceptable. It was at a point before it fell to him in as an inheritance. Elo'i kashya ha kashya. If there is something difficult, it's the following. A person knew testimony on behalf of somebody while he was an outsider, namely before he, the one who knew the testimony, married the subject's daughter. And in the interim, v'naase chasono. So going over this case again, someone signed a document on behalf of his friend at a point in time in which he was not related to him. In the course of time, the signer married the subject's daughter, subject of the document, he married the daughter. Who eino meid al ksav yodoy, the person who signed the document, who right now is the son-in-law of the subject of the document, cannot verify his signature because of his current status as a relative, and a relative is not acceptable to testify on behalf of his relative. Avol acherim meidim, but outsiders could verify the signature. What's difficult, as we've seen before with our markings, what's dashed underlined is difficult. Who lo mehemon achrini mehemni? Could it be that the person himself is not believed to verify his signatures, but others would be believed? V'chiteima hochanami, kagon shehuchsuk ksav yodoy bebezdin, and if you want to say that this case is also dealing with a situation where the court already certified the signatures in this document prior to this, and it's the court that's coming to certify their henpik, their court certification. The ho Omar Rav Yosef Bar Menuhmi Omar Rav Nachman afal pi shelo huchsuk ksav yodo bebeisdin. Rav Yosef says that this halacha, namely others could verify the signature where the signer himself could not, applies to a case even where it was not court certified. And this becomes, once again, a difficult thing to understand. How could it be that the signer himself is not believed, but outsiders would be believed? Umay kushyo, dilmo gzeras melechi. Maybe it's a rule of the king. Namely, this is a rule that the Kodesh Baruch Hu communicated in his Torah. Namely, it's a Torah law. De ihu lo mehemon, v'achrini mehemni, v'lav mishum demeshakir. That the concerned party, that the signer himself, who is currently a relative, is not believed, but outsiders would be believed. And the non-believability, the non-acceptability of the relative is not a function of the chashash, of the suspicion that he might lie. It's not similar to the case above involving a thief. But rather, it's called a gzeiras hakosev, or what the Gemara referred to here as a gzeiras hamelech, a rule that is of a divine nature, not something that we can necessarily understand, but rather accept it at face value, that relatives are just not acceptable. De'i lo te'ma'ochi, because if you don't say that, but rather you say that there's something inherently problematic with relatives, namely that there's a fear of lying, that's hard to believe. Moshe ve'Aaron l'choisonam, if the Moshe Rabbeinu or Aaron HaKohen had signed a document for their father-in-law, Mishum delo mehemnihu, would you say that they could not testify on the document that the subject of which was their father-in-law? Is that because you're afraid they might be lying? Elogzeros melechu shelo yaidu lohem. Rather, the unacceptability of a relative is called Xeros HaMelech. Hachinam Xeros melechu shelo yaid alksav yodoi lechoisnoi. So too over here, someone who is currently a son-in-law cannot testify concerning his signature when the beneficiary of this testimony would be his father-in-law. But with that, we don't run into a problem of some type of law that's hard to fathom logically. Very simply stated, that there's a standard that says people who are currently relatives cannot testify. And that doesn't serve, that doesn't bother us in the face of the reality that others, that outsiders, could testify. So what's the difficult halacha that was sent from Eretz Yisrael? In other words, the Gemara opened up at the bottom of Kuf Nun Chesom and Beis saying that a particular halacha was sent and it was classified as Koshe Bedine Momenes. Eloli Oilom Kida Amrinon Meikora. Rather, we're going to revert to something that was said much earlier. Let us use the arrows that appear in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You see an arrow here, and you can line it up with the arrow found at the top of the page. The arrow is telling you here, go to the line where the previous arrow is pointing. And we notice at the top of the page the case of a son that sold his father's property during the lifetime of his father, the son dying, and the grandson coming along and claiming from the purchasers that which they purchased as being his. When we originally presented that, we said that's not a difficult halacha. On the fourth line from the top, where you notice the double underline, the Gemara said that maybe it could be argued that a grandson moves into the position of his father with respect to his grandfather's property and says, I am an heir and my father had no right to sell my grandfather's property while the grandfather was still alive. And that was based on a pasuk. And if that be the case, if a grandson has a claim that he moves into the line of inheritance to inherit immediately from his grandfather, based on the pasuk, so then it becomes a logical halacha. The Gemara says, no. The Gemara is going to say in a moment that the pasuk that was cited to give credence to such behavior on the part of the grandson is not a pasuk that has a legal application, but rather the pasuk is of a blessing nature, blessing a wishful type of pasuk, whereby it's saying that tzaddikim will have sons and grandchildren to inherit them, and that's even indicated by the concluding section of the pasuk that, which says Tishisemoi Lisorim Bechalaretz, indicating that the nature of the pasuk is one of a blessing nature and not one of legal import. Now we can see this in the Gemara. Eloli Oilom Kidamino Meikora, as we said above, the difficult halacha was that which appeared at the top of the page. Uda Kokashi Aloch, and if you'll say that shouldn't be difficult because we have a pasuk that gives strength to the grandson to occupy the position of his father, namely Tachas Avoisecha Yubonecha, To that, the Gemara says, no, that pasuk is not of a legal nature. Hahu bivrocha ksiv. That is a blessing to tzaddikim, that they will have children and grandchildren to inherit them. And therefore, we can revert back to suggest that that, in fact, was kosher b'dinei momenes. The Gemara asks a question on this. You'll notice in the margin, in the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, a kuf that's encircled appears with a dashed line, dashed vertical line, that continues a number of lines down in the Gemara text on kuf nun tes omid beis. With this, we will be beginning a long question. The question essentially saying, who is to say that this pasuk is of a non-halachic nature? We will present a Mishnah that we learned recently, and as a result of the understanding of the Mishnah as the Gemara proposes on Amid Beis, we will see that it must be that grandchildren do occupy the position of their fathers and can lay claim as heirs of their grandfather's property. Let us start the question. Umi motzis amris bivrocha ksiv, avol le'inyon dino lo. Can you really suggest that this pasuk, namely the tachas avosecha, you bonecha, is a pasuk of a mere blessing nature and not of legal significance? V'hotnan. We have the following Tanaic source. In our marking system, those sections that appear in frames are of a Tanaic nature. And here we have a Mishnah that we learned a few dapim ago. The case is as follows. Nofal habayis olov v'al oviv. Or another case, olov v'al morisho. A house caved in on a person and his father, or a person and those that bequeath property unto him, his morishim, those from whom he inherits. V'hoisa olov ksubas isha ubal choiv. And the son, the olov, the central character in this case, happened to owe money to pay off marriage obligations, the ksubas isha, or creditors, the balei chov, that were coming to collect from him. And we know from having learned this on a few occasions prior to this, that this particular son has no means of paying off these debts unless he would inherit from either his father or from Morishov. Yorshe Ho'av Oimrim. The Yorshe Ho'av place a claim as follows. They say, Haben Meis Rishon V'achakach Meis Ho'av. The son died first, and then his father. If that be the case, if the son died first and then the father, the son never inherited from the father. The opposite is the case. The father inherited from the son, and the son had nothing really to pass on to the father, as we mentioned before. And the Yorshav are arguing against the Balei Chov that you have no claim over here. Ubalei Ubal Choiv Oimer, the creditor, says the opposite. Ha'av Meis Rishon V'achakach Meis Haben. The father died first, and then the son. And as such, we have from where to collect our debt, because the son that owed us the money inherited the father, being that the father died first and then the son. My love, is it not so? We have a geometric form here to strengthen, to be part of the question. From if we make the following assumption that follows, we will then strengthen, will bolster the question that we're proposing. Later in the Gemara, the same form, the volcano form, will flip over, indicating a response. But at this point, we're going to develop the question. The question being that the pasuk that we cited on Amud Aleph, Tachas Avosecha Yubonecha, is of a legal nature, as follows. my lav, your shehoav, that the expression featured in the Tanakh source, we have quotation marks here, but it was squiggle underlined in the original source. We had the story where the Yor Sheho'av were arguing against the Baal Chov. Who is this Yor Sheho'av? Boni. We can take advantage of our diagram. Roman numeral number one, we notice Yankiv, a grandfather, his son Reuven. We have slash marks going through them indicating they died. They died in the house collapse. And we have a grandson, Chanoch, who we term Boni on the chart, because that's what the Gemara is saying right now, that Yor She'av is a reference to Boni. And the Chanoch, in this particular example, is arguing against the creditors. Namely, Chanoch is arguing that his father died first. He's the Yor She'av, the Chanoch. Chanoch here is the name of the Boni, namely Yor She'av, simply stated grandson, is arguing against the creditors, and Chanoch is arguing that Reuven, his father, died first, leaving nothing, and he, Chanoch, is coming to inherit from his grandfather. The creditors are claiming the opposite. They're claiming that first the grandfather died and then Reuven, and as such, Reuven, who owed us the money, now has a means to which to pay off his debts. Continuing in the Gemara, Morishov Achi. We've put brackets around these two words, indicating that the main thrust of the Gemara's discussion concerns the case of Boni, so we want to de-emphasize this for right now. V'i salka daitoch lo motzi omar. And if you were to suggest that the grandson could not say the following, mikoyach avua de'abo ko'asino, that I am coming in the place of my father, namely I'm occupying a position of direct inheritance of grandfather, and that his inability to claim that is because this pasuk of tachas avosecha is simply a bracha. If that be the case, then ki meis haben v'acharkach meis ha'av, even if the son would have died first and then the grandfather, namely, in our example, even if you say Reuven died first and then his father, Yankiv, my Tave, even so, the grandson would have no claim. Neima lehu Balchov, let the Balchov say, Yerushas Avuhon ko Shakilda. I am coming to collect the property that was inherited by your father. In other words, the grandson, if he were not in the line of inheritance, he wouldn't have any claim here whatsoever. At this point, the Gemara says, there is no question. And if we were talking about a case of a grandson in the line of inheritance, then this wouldn't be the topic of our discussion. In truth, the case here is not involving a case where a grandson is laying stake on the property. The Gemara continues and says, Lo, Yor Sheho'av is Ochiv. Morishov equals Achi Davua. We can take advantage of our diagrams and notice diagram Roman numeral number 2. Yor She'av does not represent grandson, as we said above. And if we would have said that, then we would have shown that the pasuk was not of a bracha nature. We will come back and tell you that the pasuk is of a bracha nature, and that a grandson laying claim on his grandfather's property by virtue of taking the position of his father represents, in fact, a difficult halacha, as the Gemara answered at the bottom of Amud Aleph. What about the case of the house caving in? So the Yorshe Ha'av that were going up against the creditors were, in fact, not the son of the son, but rather the brother of that son. Let us take a look at our alternative diagram under Roman numeral number 2. We see a Yankiv, and we see a Reuven. That was the case of Nofel Abayis Olovi Al Oviv. The house caved in on Reuven and on his father. We see slash marks through their names indicating they are the ones that died. And we see Shimon circled. We've circled him because he's the one going up against the creditors. Shimon is claiming that first Reuven died, and then Yankiv, his father, died. And he, Shimon, is claiming ownership of the property to the chagrin of the Balei Chov, to their great dismay. However, they come with the taina, they come with a claim, a counterclaim, indicating that first Yankiv died, and then Reuven died. And Reuven is the one that owed us the money. And therefore, we have a claim on the property. The Gemara mentioned the other case as well, the case of Morishov, that we have featured in our diagram number 3, Roman number 3. The ones in that case who were going up against the creditors were the heirs of Morishov. Who are the heirs of Morishov? So in our diagram, though, truth be told, this really isn't the focus of our Gemara's discussion, but we have a chart on the side of our Gemara, Roman number 3, that explains this all the same. We notice in this chart, there was a fellow, Yankiv, who had a son, Reuven. Yankiv had a brother, Esav. The house caved in on Esav and Reuven, Yankiv having died already quite a time ago. The house caved in on Reuven and his uncle. Esav is called Morishov with regard to Reuven. He's someone that would have been a source of inheritance for Reuven. The Yorshe Morishov would be a brother of Esav. He is coming with a claim against the creditors, against those that Reuven owed money to. Namely, this Ach of Esav, we've circled Ach, is claiming that Reuven died first and then Esav. If that be the case, Reuven had no means of, he had no way to collect any money with which to pay you guys off. The creditors, on the other hand, are claiming that first Esav died and then Reuven, and Reuven is the one that owed us the money. Hence, we do have a source of collection. At this point in the Gemara, though, we see a slash mark, indicating that as far as the original question of what is the nature of the difficult halacha to understand that was shalchu mitam, the kosha b'dinei momonos, it was in fact the case of that which the Gemara presented at the upper part, at the top of Kuf Nun Tes Amud Aleph, of a son that sold property during the lifetime of his father, and dying while his father was still alive. Then the grandfather died, and the grandson came to the purchasers claiming that they owe the property to him, the grandson. And this, we said, was kosher b'dinei momonos, and that the pasuk that the grandson might have tried to cite to give him strength, the claim was really a pasuk of a bracha nature alone. The slash mark indicates that the new Gemara, the coming Gemara, is not related to that which appeared before. On the outside margin, we have a topic heading, the Nosei Ben. Mahu Shirash Es Imoi Bekever Lahanchil La'achin Min Ho'av. We're going to deal with a case of a mother and a son. The mother of this particular boy was married to a man that had another wife. The second wife produced children, so that the son in question here has brothers from a common father. Given that the son of this particular mother dies before his mother, and then his mother dies, the question will be, can the son inherit from his mother and serve as a conduit to transfer the property that he supposedly inherits from his mother to his brothers that he has through their common father? Let us turn to the Gemara. Bo'u minei me'rav sheshes. Ben mahu shi'irash es imo bakever, v'hanchil la'achin mino av. Let us look at our diagram, number 4, which you see in the margin of the Gemara. In diagram number 4, we have a fellow, Yankov, who's found between Leah and Rachel. Yankov is married to two wives. Yankov and Rachel produce Yosef. Yankov and Leah produce Reuven. The question that was asked of Rav Sheshes is as follows. In the event that Yosef, son of Rachel, dies before his mother, and then his mother Rachel dies, can it be said that Yosef, though he's already dead at the point that his mother died, would inherit his mother's property, and by Yosef inheriting his mother's property but being dead, those that inherit Yosef would then benefit from that inheritance, namely Reuven would in effect get the property of Rachel. Let us see the answer. The Gemara presents a long answer. It starts here, and we can see through the markings in the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text an encircled tuf indicating teretz, or tshuva, an answer, and it's going to last all of the lines that are opposite this dashed vertical line. The nature of this Gemara is the Gemara will open up with Rav Sheshes saying the answer is provided in a Tanaic source. However, the Tanaic source in and of itself will be difficult to understand until the Gemara restates it, as it will do on the last narrow line, where you see a second framed section representing the restatement of the source. And through that, we will then approach an answer to this particular question. So the Gemara begins. Omar Luhu Rav Sheshes. Tenisua. Let us turn to the following Tanaic source. Ho'av Shenishba. A man, a father, was taken into captivity and died somewhere in captivity. Umay Spino b'Medina. And his son died in his homeland. So we have a father and a son dying in different places. Another case, Uben Shenishba, or a son that was taken captivity, Umeis Ovid B'Medina. The son died in captivity, the father died in his hometown. Yorshe Ho'av, V'Yorshe Haben Yachloku. The heirs of the father, the heirs of the son, shall divide. Hechi Domi. What is the case that's spoken about here? I Lema Kidikotani. If you're going to take it literally as it is stated, Heininu Yorshe Ho'av V'Heininu Yorshe Haben. The Rashbam, in the lower part of the page, says, heinihu yorsheo avichulei, falo im ein loi bonim lo laav velo leben, if this father has no other sons, and the son over here has himself no sons, krove ho'av yorshin eshnehem, the father's relatives would inherit both of them. There isn't a function here of two groups challenging each other. Oi, im yesh bonim lo'isoi ben, if the son in this particular story who died had left himself a son, namely, there's a grandson that's left, then hare hein yorshin esho'av v'esha'ben, then they would be the sole heirs. So the case that we have at hand, if you take it literally, it's hard to understand who is arguing, who is trying, who are the two groups vying for ownership of the property. Elo lav hochi komar. Rather, we're to understand the source as follows. Av shinishbo umes ben bito b'medina. A man was taken captive, and he died in captivity, and his daughter's son, his grandson, died in their hometown. Uben shinishbo, or a case where a fellow died, umes avi imoi v'medina, and his mother's father died in their hometown. V'lo yadinon hei minayu misbereisha, and we don't know who died first. Yorshi av, yorshi aben, yachloiku. Before going any further, let's take advantage of a diagram that explains this case in greater detail. We see diagram Roman numeral number 5. We have a man called Av. We've also included in parentheses Avi Imo. He has a daughter, Pas, under him. And under him, we have someone called Ben, which we've included in parentheses Ben Bito, as this was his, he was referred to thusly in the Gemara. We've indicated with a brace on positioned outside the chart, Safek mi meis rishon, avi imoi oi ben bito. What's not clear is who died first. The grandfather, we see a slash through his name, who through Av, indicating death, and a slash through the ben bito. And as we just said, the doubt here is who died first. Who are the parties laying claim? So on the chart, we have that the Av has a brother. We've called him Aleph, and with a little key underneath the chart, Ach Aleph is called Yorshe Ha'av. He would be the heir. He represents an heir of the Av. We have also on this chart the Bas, who appears under Av, had been married to a man called Baal. This Baal had another wife called Isha. The Baal with the Bas produced Ben, as you can see with the connecting lines, the Ben Bito. The Baal, this husband with his other wife, produced Ben that's encircled. When there's a little bays indicating in the key underneath, the Ben is called Yorshe HaBen. He is the heir of the Ben with the slash. They have their brothers from a common father. So in this case, we see Yorshe HaAv claiming that the Ben, the grandson, died first, and then their benefactor, the Av. And we have the other party that circled, the Ben, claiming that first the grandfather died, the Av, first he died, and then the Ben. And as such, this particular circled individual, the Ben, would inherit his brother from their common father. As far as the source is concerned, it said that since there's a matter of doubt here who died first, these two parties, the Ben and the Ach, the circled individuals on our chart, they split. Continuing in the Gemara now. V'im Esau, if it were so that a son inherits his mother even if he died before his mother. Before we go any further, we must add one point to the chart, that the Bas on the chart, and you can see we've included this information, she died after her son. Continuing in the Gemara, if it were so that a son inherits his mother even in the event that he died before his mother, V'im Esau nihinami deben meis bereisha, even if it were so that the son dies first, lirse lavua diime bekivrei, let him be in the position of his mother to inherit his grandfather, v'lirsinu liachva minavua, and thereby, even under these circumstances, pass the property on to his brother from the common father. In other words, not only in the case where the claim where it could be maintained that the grandfather died first and then the grandson, which would certainly enable the Ben that's encircled to inherit, but even in the other case where the grandson died first and then the grandfather, still the grandson would have been in the direct line of inheritance of his grandfather, taking the position of his mother. But we don't seem to say that. We seem to say that only under the circumstances that the grandfather died first and then the grandson would the Ben that's encircled have a chance. El Olav, continuing in the Gemara, Shma Mino, from the fact that the ruling of this source indicates Yachloku and not a one-sided inheritance on the part of the grandson's brother, we conclude, Shma Mino, Ein HaBen Yorish Esimo Bekever Lahanchil Achin Me'av, that a son who dies before his mother, in fact, does not inherit his mother to pass on property to his own brothers from a common father. So with this, the question that was raised, that was posed to Rav Sheshes offers this as an answer, that the son does not inherit his mother when he dies before his mother. Omale Rav Acha bar Minyamin l'Abaye, Af Anan Nami Tanina. We have a Tanaic source, one of our earlier Mishnayos, that proves this point. Nofal Habayis Olov V'al Imoy. A case where a house caved in on a son and on his mother. Elu v'elu moedim shiachloku. We said that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree that the Yorshe Haben and the Yorshe Ho'em split. V'im Esau, if it were so that a son inherits his mother even when he dies before his mother, Nehinami de ben meis bereisha, even if that were the case that the son had died first, lirse liime bekivrei, let him still inherit his mother, v'lirsu inhu laachi meavua, and let his yorshim, namely his brothers from a common father, inherit. And yet we don't say that. The Mishnah says yachloku, that the son's heirs split the property with the mother's heirs. Elolav shma mino, from the fact that it says in this source in the Mishnah Yachloiku, Ein haben yorish esimo bekever lahanchil achin mino av shma mino. And therefore, this is viewed as a clear conclusion that the son does not inherit his mother in the event that he dies before his mother. V'taimomai. Why is it that a son does not inherit his mother when he dies before her. Omar Abaye, Nemro Sibo Beven, Venemro Sibo Bebal. The word Sibo is a reference to Psukim that the Gemara introduced in the 8th Perek on Daf Kuf Yud Dalid Omid Beis. The term Sibo or Yosuv Nachalo appears in the context of a son with regard to his mother, Venemro Sibo Bebal, and the same term appears with regard to a husband with regarding his wife. Ma Sibo Ha'amura Bebal, just like the laws of inheritance that govern a husband's inheriting his wife, Ein Habal Yurish Es Ishto Bakever, a husband does not inherit from his wife in the grave. What does that mean? Given a case where a person's wife died before her father, and then her father dies, we do not say that the husband inherits his father-in-law's property through his wife, but rather, under such circumstances, the father-in-law's property would go to the father-in-law's family. Af sibo ha'amura beben, so too, by virtue of the fact that the same word appears, the same term appears in the context of a son and his mother, ein haben yoresh es imoy bekever lahanchil la'achin min ho'av. So too, a son does not inherit from his mother in the event that he dies before his mother, in order to pass property on to his brothers from a common father. At this point, we see a slash mark indicating that the following piece of Gemara will be a brand new idea. We also notice a new geometric form, the use of a diamond. This is explained in the outside margin, Mivneh. We see Shnei Mikrim, two cases. Shibohem Nires Stira Bepiske Rav Nachman V'Rova L'Toivas HaMoicher or L'Toivas HaLokeach. Two rulings that are offered on the part of Rav Nachman and Rava. In each case, Rav Nachman and Rava are arguing, but they seem to be inconsistent with their own rulings in a subsequent case. We also will notice a double underline. This is in order to make it easier for us to focus on Rav Nachman. Rava will receive a single underline, but with Rav Nachman, double underline, we'll be able to point out the inconsistency in the Piskei Halacha and the legal rulings of Rav Nachman and of Rava. It might be noted that this Gemara is in effect a repeat Gemara. It's repeated word for word from the 3rd Perek. The Rashbam points out that since we mentioned the term in the Mishnah, Nechosim Bechezkoson, the cases that we will have over here also have a similar idea behind them, namely following a given status. And as a result of that, the Gemara quotes it over here. But as far as the Rashbam commentary, Rashbam tells you that everything that needs to be commented on is found when the Gemara appeared earlier, Daf Chof Tes Amid Beis and Daf Lamed Amid Aleph. So let us learn the cases. Hahu di Omar Le Lechavrei. A man offered property for sale to his friend, and he said, Nichsi Debar Sisin Mizavnino Loch. I am selling you the Bar Sisin property. Havachada Aro de Havamikri de Bay Bar Sisin. There was one parcel of land that was called Bay Bar Sisin. Omar Le, the seller says, Ha Lav de Bay Bar Sisin he Vikriyahu de Mikri de Bay Bar Sisin. It's not authentic Bar Sisin property. Bar Sisin being associated with a certain family owned properties that were of a known quality. There was one parcel of land that the seller says is not included in the sale because that parcel of land was simply, people called it Bar Sisin property, but it wasn't the real Bar Sisin property. Also the Kamei, the Rav Nachman, the case came to Rav Nachman, where of course the seller is claiming this particular parcel was not included in the sale, and the buyer saying that his payment for the Bar Sisan properties includes this as well. The case came to Rav Nachman, Ukma b'yod lokeach. Rav Nachman paskins in favor of the purchaser. We've included in our write-ins between the lines something that will prove to be very helpful. Rav Nachman here is going l'toivas halokeach. He's siding with the purchaser. Amar le Rava. Rava objects, and Rava will argue l'toivas hamocher, which we've written in between the lines, to benefit the seller. Rava turns to Rav Nachman. Amar le Rava le Rav Nachman. Dina hachi, says in wonderment, is this the way to rule? Hamotzi mechavero olav haraya. We should apply the well-known legal concept that he was trying to extract, upon him is the burden of proof. If that be the case, who is trying to extract? Who is trying to take away? Who is trying to acquire? The purchaser is trying to acquire, so the burden of proof is on him to say that the property in question is genuine bar season. And until that point, I would rule in favor of the seller. V'romi d'rovo ad'rovo, v'uderav Nachman ad'rav Nachman. We're now going to raise that which appears to be inconsistent within Rava and similarly within Rav Nachman. And that brings us to the second case, this second diamond. Hahu d'omar le l'chavrei. We've also offered, as part of our markings, a long question marking, as you can see, a kuf that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating that the length of the question will last these amount of lines that are opposite the dashed vertical line. Hahu d'omar le l'chavrei, my boys b'hai besa. What are you doing in this house? Omar le, the occupant says, minoch zavinta v'achlis shnei chazoka. I bought it from you, and I've consumed it for 3 years. Shnei chazoka, the years indicating possession. Omar le, the original owner says, ano b'shchuni gavoy havoy. I was dwelling all of this time in inner chambers of this house, and I was passing through where you were all of these years, and for that reason I remained silent. I didn't mind your being here, but in no way do you have a chazaka of sole use and hence proof of ownership. Also lekameh d'Rav Nachman. The case came in front of Rav Nachman, and momentarily we will see how Rav Nachman rules in favor of the seller. Compare this, of course, to what we saw in the case before, where Rav Nachman's name was double underlined, and we had written in there, he ruled to benefit the purchaser. What happens here? Also, l'kamei to Rav Nachman, omale, Rav Nachman says, he says to the current occupier, to the machzik, he says, zil bror achilascha, go and clarify your use of the property, namely, bring witnesses that could testify that you lived by yourself for 3 years without this fellow who's claiming he was there too. Omar le Rava le Rav Nachman. Rava here sides with the machzik, with the purchaser. Note this in contrast with what Rava had done before. Rava before had sided with the seller, with the original owner. So Rava says, Amar lei Rava l'Rav Nachman, Dina hachi, is the ruling to be, as you just suggested, giving precedence, giving ownership to the seller? Hamotzi mechavero olav haraya. He was trying to take away, namely the seller, who's trying to take away from someone who has been there for 3 years, upon the seller is burden of proof. And if he cannot bring proof, so then the machzik should win. Kashya d'Rava ad'Rava, u'd'Rav Nachman ad'Rav Nachman. We see a contradiction within Rava's rulings and within Rav Nachman's rulings, as we pointed out before. The Gemara answers, d'Rava ad'Rava lo kashya. There's no inconsistency in Rava. Rava basically follows the machzik. He will always benefit the one who is in possession of the property. Hacha, notice we've written in Aleph in a parenthesis, this corresponds to the Aleph case, to the first diamond, where an Aleph appeared above as well. And this, in the Aleph case, Mocher Koi Benichsei, there was a fellow who was, up till this point in time, was selling, was owned property, and was right now selling it. So up till this point, the owner, the Mocher, was the Muchsak. Hasam, in the Bay's case, Lokeach Koi Benichsei, the purchaser has been for the last number of years in the property. No one is even arguing with that particular fact. The issue is, was he there alone indicating ownership, or was he there with the previous owner sharing it with him? But all that being the same, in the Bay's case, the muhsuk was, certainly the lokeach was muhsuk on it, had possession of it. Rav Nachman ad Rav Nachman lo kashya. Likewise, within Rav Nachman, there is no inconsistency. We will be able to explain his ruling in each case, respectively. Hacha, in the Aleph case, where he paskin, where he ruled in favor of the purchaser, came on the Omar le debe bar season, since the seller said, I'm selling you bar season property, umikri debe bar season, and it's also publicly known as bar season, it's called bar season, olei dide, ramio ligluya delav debe bar season hu. It is upon him, upon the seller, to ligluya, to reveal that it is something other than, that it is not authentic bar season property. In other words, he's trying to run against the common understanding. Hossam, in the Bay's case, where he ruled, where Rav Nachman ruled in favor of the seller, his ruling in favor of the seller and against the possessor in that case had what we termed, or what he claimed was a chazaka of 3 years. A chazaka is something, is an a legal institution that comes in lieu of a document, a shtar, showing ownership. Imagine this fellow had the primary source of ownership indication, namely he had a shtar. What would we say to someone that produces a shtar? Continuing, let's continue in the Gemara. Lo yehe elo denokit shtar, let it be nothing other than holding a shtar, that this purchaser or this machzik had a shtar, which is the primary source of ownership, of showing, of designating ownership. Would we not have told him, Milo Amrinonle, would we not have told him, Kayim Shtarucha Vekum Benichsi, verify your shtar, and then stand and continue holding on to your property. So just like in the case that he had a shtar, which would be the primary source of ownership, and even so, we would put a burden upon him to prove his shtar, to verify his shtar. So too over here, we say the same thing. Prove or verify your chazaka, and only then would you be able to gain ownership. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.